Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static, everybody. This is Scott. And last week, you heard that Josh had a very special guest on and that I was gone. And surprise, I was the very special guest. So if you didn't listen to that episode because you heard I was gone, go back in the archives and listen to it. Give it a chance.
It was a gag,
it people. It was a gag. But before we get started this week, I'd like to say please go to adamandeve.com. Pick out the sex toy of your choice, or DVD, or lingerie, or any of the thousands of products that they offer. At the end, if you throw in the promo code STATIC, you will get 50% off of one item, 3 free DVDs, free shipping, and
In the United States.
In the United States. Free shipping in the United States, and a special free mystery gift that we don't even know what it is, so and let us know. So, and again, that promo code is STATIC. You also get a nice warm feeling because you helped me and Josh out.
Keep the lights on.
Exactly. So this week, these last couple episodes, this one and the last one, were kind of my idea because we haven't had a guest on in a while. And people have been like, when are you going to have another guest on? We will. They're not as easy to find as you think. But people had never had really had a chance to get to know me and Josh outside of the radio show. And
I thought it was kind of a funny way to do it with pretending that Scott was not Scott, but he was Scott. I thought that was kind of funny. Scott thinks that I thought he was going to do the same to me, but then he was like, no, that gag's not going to work twice.
Yeah. It's one of those things that only works once. So nonetheless, so this week I will be interviewing Josh.
Except I won't be getting all meta about
exactly,
not being me.
Exactly. First off, Josh, Lost in the Static really was your baby. You're the one that came up with the idea. You're the one that approached me. Where did this come from?
Well, okay, we're going to be getting into much more detail in our 100th episode.
Okay.
Our 100th episode is going to be, Scott likes to use this term, an inside baseball episode.
Perfect.
But it just kind of came from the idea, like you said last week when you weren't you, and you know, you heard all these other shows and these podcasts and stuff, and you thought, this doesn't sound that hard. And you've known me long enough, Scott, I'm kind of a big mouth.
Yeah,
and
say the least.
I said, I want a forum. And I just came up with this idea, and you and I had recently parted ways from Channel 26, and I thought you'd be a good co-host because we always had great conversations at 26, just sitting on that really crappy, smelly leather couch that used to be in the studio. We'd sit on that and just talk about movies or music or TV just how shit our jobs were.
I was going to say either that leather couch or that god-awful morning set that... The two chairs with the fake books behind it and everything like that?
The one thing I will give those fucking chairs... My God, they were ugly as shit. They looked awful.
Yes.
So you tell me if I'm wrong that those were not some of the most deceptively comfortable chairs you've ever sat in your life.
I spent enough time sleeping on them. Yes,
I mean, you just sit in there and all of a sudden you're like, and I'm dozing.
Yes.
Those things were, I don't know if there was melatonin in the cushions or something.
But it was really, we used to use those for interviews on the morning set and our guests would fall asleep all the time on those things. So, okay, so this was something you came up with as a forum. Now, a lot of the views that you hold, especially concerning pop culture and
politics,
television and politics and everything, they're very contrarian to a lot of people. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, I don't even think Josh really feels this way. He just wants to raise some hackles and raise some cane. And so he takes this very contrary view. So tell me, are the views that you hold on the show yours, or are you just trying to raise some feathers?
They really are mine. I don't think it would be honest to myself or to the listeners if I, in a way, just put on a character that was, hey, you know, you guys love, you know, Joss Whedon, so I'm going to take the opposite road. No, it's when I take the opposite road from the mainstream, that is my true feelings. I really do hate this stuff. Because to me, and I put this on my website, to me, the mainstream is by definition mainstream, and I've always found that to be boring. I've always found the mainstream to just be boring. I want something different, which, as you pointed out last week, is really strange to my personality of never wanting to try anything different outside of like a movie or something pop culture. It's weird.
It really is. Now, when we talk about movies and television and pop culture, you really do have this encyclopedic knowledge, and you have probably one of the more impressive collections of, for lack of a better term, we'll call it broadcast history, and recent broadcast history that I've seen.
That was really hard for you to say, wasn't it?
It really was. But I know that if I want to find an old show, or if I want some knowledge of an old show, you're one of the first sources I turn to. When did this love of television and media and all that, when did it manifest itself, and how did you get started?
Honestly, I think it's more the TV and that cable box were more of a parent than my parents ever were to me. You know, I know that this is going to sound like I'm trying to make a joke here, but since you're a child of the 80s as well, I think you will agree with me on this. You learned more life lessons from Optimus Prime and Duke from G.I. Joe than you did from, at least in my case, from my dad. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I think I'm not a good person to agree or disagree. You heard last week how much I was traveling.
I'm saying that you can see how Optimus Prime taught me more about what being honest was than my dad did, especially because my dad was a drop-down drunk, and he was both physically and emotionally and verbally abusive.
Okay.
That, you know, Duke and Optimus Prime raised me.
I can definitely see and understand that one. So when did you, first off, how big is your collection now, roughly?
I couldn't even tell you. VHS tapes I have. Have you ever seen those large priority boxes, those like flat rate ones?
Yes.
Well, okay, those hold 26 VHS tapes in them. Okay. Very nice and snug. Last I counted, I had about 400 of those. And that's not even counting all the ones I don't have boxed up. You've seen my basement with the shelves of tapes.
Yes, it's
stacks
impressive.
On that table that I want to display, but I don't have room. I can't figure out what I'm going to do with.
Right.
That's not counting the DVDs, the laser discs, the betas. That's just, my collection is innumerable at this point.
So when did you get started?
Collecting?
Yes.
Right off the bat, I always thought it was just neat to have, you know, why just have Empire Strikes Back when you can have that cool looking box sitting on the shelf too, you know? And then the comic books, my dad being a lifelong drunk, every time he would go to get a new bottle of liquor or a 12 pack or something, especially if it was behind my mom's back, he would go to this liquor store that always carried comic books. So to bribe my brother and I, he'd always buy us a couple of comics.
Ah, okay.
And so, you know, I'm reading Conan and the Hulk while my dad's getting plastered.
Okay. So we've learned that your dad probably shouldn't be held up as the best example of a dad in the world. What part did your mom play in your life?
I'm not trying to be insulting to my mom. I really don't want to be. But she tried to do her best, but it was one of those. And to my knowledge, my dad was not physically abusive towards her.
Okay.
I never saw that. But it was just kind of ignore the problem and hope it goes away. And that included us kids, kind of. I mean, she was not like an absentee mother or anything like that. And she tried. But for one thing, she massively overcompensated on things. Like my mom is religious. And you know how hardcore of an atheist I am, that, you know, she'd force me to go to church. She'd force me to go to Sunday school. She'd force me to go through confirmation. And you know as well as I do, that's just going to push me farther away.
Right.
And I think she thought that was compensating for, my, you know, the lack of a father figure I had. And it's no, Ma, that didn't work.
Okay, so she tried to find you a good dad within the church.
And so yeah. Speak.
Okay. And now you mentioned that you had a brother. Do you have any other brothers or sisters?
Not that I'm aware of, but I didn't find out till after the fact that my dad was kind of promiscuous on my mom, so I don't have any other siblings I'm aware of.
Okay, so there may be a rogue half-sibling.
There may be a rogue half out there. I doubt it, but you never know.
You never know. So now what, were you and your brother close growing up, or?
Never. It was almost like you asked about me always taking the opposite side of a
sure,
issue.
Sure.
That's when my brother and I could not be more different.
Now, is he older than you or younger?
4 years younger.
4 years younger. Okay.
And he and I could not be more different. We hold almost the opposite opinion on everything. Physically, we look almost completely different. You know, I'm kind of short and fat and hairy. He is very tall and built and takes care of himself. And our political views, exact opposite. The types of movies we like, exact opposite. Type of music we listen to, exact opposite. Type of women we're interested in, exact opposite. It's almost like he and I are oil and water. We're yin and yang. We're the positive and negative electrons.
My sister and I are similar, so I can relate. Now, people may actually be familiar with your brother. What does or did he do for a living?
For a living, he still does just, you know, 9-to-5 kind of jobs. But he was big. You people that are listening have to remember what the mid to late 90s were like in this era. Scott, you remember backyard wrestling?
Oh, yeah. Made it huge.
That whole, we're going to videotape ourselves. You know wrestling's fake. You know the WWF at that time it still was. The WWF is fake. But we're going to really take real chairs and hit each other over the head with them. And we're going to, you know, really take light bulbs and smash them into each other's arms and things. And this was a huge fad in the late 90s.
This was kind of toward the, this was also around the birth of Jackass and all of that. And
this actually predates Jackass.
Okay.
Jackass was in a weird way born out of that backyard wrestling phase.
Okay.
And my brother started doing all this and got famous for this. You know, he was going to be on the Tom Green show, but it got canceled. Right, my brother was actually considered too controversial for the Tom Green show when he had his talk show on MTV. I'm not joking. Wow. He was scheduled, and about 3 days before he was going to fly to Los Angeles, they said the lawyers will not permit him.
Wow.
Tom okay. Green's lawyer or MTV's lawyers, I don't know which set of lawyers, but the lawyers would not allow him on. He was too controversial. And I believe he's been on Stern. He's been interviewed in magazines. He's been in wrestling magazines. He sells videos online and shit like that. And he's even been a playable character in the Backyard Wrestling 2 video game.
Okay.
For the PS2.
Now, has there ever been any jealousy pop up? Is this ever?
Jealousy is not the right word. Now, my brother's probably never going to hear this unless my son lets him. But I've always had an issue with, it took me forever to get my career, both doing, you know, my shows, my writing, things like that, my TV show and that, off the ground. And I always kind of resented the fact that my brother got famous for getting hit in the head with blocks of wood, and I was totally ignored for trying to write insightful prose in a magazine. You can see where a little bit of resentment kind of boiled under there that,
yes,
you know, I'm trying to do something real with my life. You're taking rebar to the face and you're being asked to be on national TV shows.
Okay.
Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of resentment there.
Okay.
You know, you're getting flown out to Los Angeles to get the motion capture done for a video game. I can't get anyone in LA to return my phone calls.
Right.
So jealousy is not the right word, because I was not jealous of what he was doing. Like, oh, I wish I could do that. It was resentment that he's getting famous for doing something that I consider, frankly, idiotic.
Okay. Now, you mentioned your writing. When did you start writing? And has writing always called to you? Or
Yes. I don't know if I've ever even shown you some of the shit that I wrote in high school.
No.
I'm literally talking just, you know, in an old notebook I've got laying in my basement somewhere. I wrote poetry, and no, not weird kind of poetry. I'm talking the kind of poetry that actually got me sent to the guidance counselor's office because they said, This kid's about ready to snap. I'm talking gore and stuff like that. And,
okay.
You know, I had one that, without realizing it, it was about a person just meeting another person on the street and then the other person freaking out and killing them in graphic ways. But it was all done in a poem, which is really strange. And I even used the weird alliterations and things without realizing it. You know, the kind of shit you absorb through osmosis for, I don't know if you guys can ever tell, I read a lot.
Now, I'll get back to your writing in a moment, but when you said, obviously at a very young age, you started reading comic books.
I started reading comic books before I could read words.
Okay.
Because if the pictures tell a good enough story, you don't need to be able to read the words to follow what the Incredible Hulk or Conan is doing that month.
Okay. And so what kind of a reading pulls you now? What kind of genres are you interested in?
Now as new or now as what I'm reading now?
Now as in what you're reading now.
I don't like modern fiction as much. I don't know. It's got this weird internet culture style to it. I think that makes sense. But I love horror. I love science fiction. And I've been reading a lot of nonfiction lately. I mean, books like, you know, about the history of computer hacking, about the history of MTV. I read two different books on that. The history of certain authors, the history of, you know, like the horror host movement, things like that. A lot of nonfiction as well as a lot of science fiction.
Okay. And did you grow up kind of reading the science fiction, the Titans, like the, or, you know, Heinlein
Grow up, not as much. When I got into high school, that's when I started reading like Stranger in a Strange Land and Richard Matheson and Ray Bradbury and things like that.
And how do you think science fiction, do you think that it plays a part in your atheism? Because there, I mean, a lot of people claim that there is an atheistic theme that runs through science fiction, or we put our faith in science rather than in God. Do you think that this has affected you at all, or?
I'm not sure. I would say, you know, what affected me on that aspect more would be things like Omni and Popular Science. That always just spoke to me more. I'd read an old, or then new, but now an old Omni issue, and the things they're talking about there make more sense than God did it.
Okay.
You know, it always made more sense to me. I was always that little naysayer at the back of Sunday school class going, wait a minute, that just doesn't make any fucking sense. You know, I was always that kid.
Like, to tell you the truth, Josh, from what I've known, I think you were in the back of just about every class going, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense.
Pretty much. I actually caused so much of a ruckus regularly in my English class. I was in high school, but I don't remember which year it was. I actually was relegated. My desk was all the way at the back corner, so I wouldn't bother anybody else, because the teacher put it, and I know this will be hard for you to admit, but I'm not a stupid person. I'm intelligent individual.
Intelligence I will give you. Not always common sense, but intelligence I will give you.
And I was told by the teacher, the rest of these kids have futures, and I'm not going to let you ruin their future. And you know what? Some of them kids are now the ones that pump my gas and take my order at the restaurant. So, you know, boy, did that work out well for you fuckers.
What was the first job that you held?
You mean like paying gig?
Paying job.
Well, I'm not going to count the picking strawberries, because that, you know, like a day laborer kind of thing. I did that when I was like 14, because I couldn't you can't legally get a job in this state till you're at least 15. So.
But it's not uncommon to get paid cash.
Right. And it was a cash job. So that's why I'm saying technically it would be picking strawberries one summer, but I don't really call that a real job.
Okay.
Especially because I got fired 3 days into it. But my first real job was Pizza Hut.
Okay. Delivering or?
Making pizzas in the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
You know, that was my first real job would be Pizza Hut.
Okay. Now, obviously, you didn't stick with Pizza Hut for the rest of your life. I'm going to assume you graduated high school. Was college in the cards at all for you? Or
never.
Never?
No. Even if it would have been grade-wise, because again, and I'm not trying to sound egotistical, I consider myself a very intelligent, very well-read person. But I've never had the patience for the educational system. You know, and I'm not trying to say, oh, he's some genius, the school's moving too slow. No, I just don't like the system, the way it's set up. I don't like the structure of school. I think I learned better reading these books on my own than the English teacher assigning them and whatnot. I mean, by the time the English teacher had assigned things like Inherit the Wind or 1984 or Brave New World, I'd already read them on my own because I wanted to read them. You know, so it was like, in a weird way, I resented the fact that you're now making me read them again. It's like, I read them for pleasure. It's not pleasurable when I'm being made to read a book that otherwise I liked. Does that make any sense at all?
It does. And
especially to someone as anti-authoritarian as I am.
I was going to say, in my mind, it also harkens back that maybe if you had chosen to go to church, you would have enjoyed it more than your mom making you. That's
possibly
it rings the same bell. So what now, it was during high school that you met your wife, or
I actually met her years before I met her. Okay. We actually ended up being at the same concert together, and we just kind of passed. She remembered me when we met years later.
Oh, well done.
So it was, I met her without having any fucking clue who the hell she was. Does that make any sense? That we just kind of like a passed in the night, hey, and that was it?
It does, yes.
And well, then it turned out we had a friend in common that neither of us knew about the other person, but we had a friend in common that we found out years later. A couple of friends in common, actually. But yeah, I met my wife while I was still in high school, but my wife is older than me, so she was no longer in high school.
So she was done. You were, okay.
Yeah, my wife is about rounding about 2 years older than I am.
Okay.
So I'm a junior and she's already graduated.
Okay. Okay. And obviously we in the past we've talked about your son. You do have an 18-year-old son now.
Yes.
Which means that you got started kind of early.
I knocked her up while I was still in high school. I'm not ashamed to say that.
Okay.
I knocked her up while I was, I actually brought my son to my senior year's parenting class to go, I've already done all this. I need to get an A in parenting. I'm an actual parent already.
He hasn't died yet. I win.
Pretty much.
So now, how do you think being a father, you know, obviously you talked about how your father was certainly not a very good role model. How do you think being a father yourself has shaped your views on the world or anything like that?
I'm not sure it's shaped them all that much. I mean, yes, there are certain issues that, you know, as a father, you're going to look at differently. But like if you're talking political issues, religious issues, you know, whether gays should be able to marry and whatnot, I don't think it affects that. I think I'd have the same opinion regardless.
So do you think with your father being kind of a, well, being a bad father, has that shaped how you've been a father? Have you tried to be, have you compensated and tried to be a better father, or?
I've tried, and I'm man enough to admit I think I failed. I fucked the kid up. I was not a great father. I'm man enough to admit that.
Where do you think you fucked up?
I screwed him up on a lot of levels.
Okay.
You know, I mean, without going into too much detail that I'm sure my wife and him would not want me to go into, I was not a great father. I tried, but I was not the father that I now wish I could go back and do and redo. You know, I don't want to say he was a test, but if I ever have another kid, I've already made my mistakes. And unfortunately, he has to pay for them. And I do not feel good about that.
I understand that completely. Let's switch gears. Now, I met you while working at NBC 26, but
yes.
You obviously, by the time you got there, you've had quite a history in media already. How did you get started in radio first or television first?
Radio.
Okay, and where did you get your start?
We joked about it in the Brad Westmore episode that you called it. It wasn't real because it was just a Sturgeon Bay radio station, that right. It wasn't real radio. And, you know, even Brad was like, well, then my jobs don't count either then. But it was this little hole in the wall. I mean, I've made this analogy before. You ever watch WKRP in Cincinnati? You know how it was the little hole in the wall radio station owned yes. by owned by a tyrannical mother and run by her son that totally feared her?
Sure.
That was a documentary. because that was the exact situation I walked into on WDOR.
Really?
Owned by a tyrannical mother who had her son, who was terrified of disappointing her, run the station. I literally, I'm like, shit. I thought that show was a sitcom. It was a fucking documentary. I can't believe this.
Well, that's different.
It's creepy, isn't it?
That really is. So what, I guess, is you grew up with a love for television and for media in general, and you obviously started collecting young and with comic books. Where did this, how did this radio station grow? Where did you go from there, basically?
Well, after I got fired from there, for once, for nothing I did wrong.
Okay.
No, it was literally one of those, and this is the same situation that got me fired from the movie theater, was there was too many employees. The owner's son, so the head of the station, his son got out of college and needed a job.
Ah.
And he got mine.
Ah.
So literally one day I was just told, you don't have to come in anymore. We'll mail you your check. I asked why, and they said, Ernst's name, that he's going to be taking your shifts from now on. And it's like, son of a bitch. So I actually didn't even do anything wrong. And trust me, I did shit wrong there that should have got me fired, but never did. I mean, I actually had the news director come in one day at the radio station and start screaming at me, do you have any fucking idea what adult contemporary means? Nobody wants to listen to this shit. I think I was playing Mountain and the Doors and stuff like that. And it was, well, nobody wants to listen to the shit you want to play. And we got into a huge throwdown while a song was on. And, you know, being an actual professional, I actually, it was one of those, hang on. We both stopped the fight, and I'm like, and the temperature is blah, blah. And then we go to the next song, and it's like, now fuck you. You know, I mean, you put on that fake face for the minute and a half you got to fill, and then you get back to the song.
So where did you go from there?
Then, I held that job at the same time I worked at the movie theater, which is why it was creepy that I got fired from both jobs for basically the same reason, that somebody that was tight with the manager wanted to take my position. So it was creepy. I lost both those almost at the same time for the same reason. And I know that sounds like I might be dodging responsibility. I'm not. That's the truth.
Okay.
But then I got a job at Channel 2 WBAY in Green Bay as a production monkey. Same thing you did, but for far less pay. It, dude, 26 paid like $4 an hour more starting than what I made after 4 years at Channel 2. So Channel 2 did the same amount of work for far less money.
And from what I've heard, they haven't exactly kept up with the cost of living.
No, which is surprising because they're the number one station in our market and they don't pay their employees fucking shit.
Right. So, okay, so you became a production assistant at WBAY, and how'd that go?
It went all right for a while because, now, you know, we have a friend in common named Eben Hemlock. He was my editor. I mean, I don't feel like I'm outing him because he was the editor on Midnight and he appeared on camera a few times and things like that. So, but he worked with me at Channel 2. So he's known me from about 2001 on. And he says, when you knew me at 26, Scott, I'd calmed down a lot. And I know you might find that, oh my God, what was he like at Channel 2?
I find that a little scary. Yes, I'll admit it.
Yeah, Evans, because he's the only one that worked with me at both places that can frankly say, yeah, Josh calmed down a lot by the time he came to 26. For the first year or so, you know, I kind of kept my head down, didn't want to make any waves. And then I decided, I can't do this anymore. I just got to be me. And I started getting it. Eben said by the time he left too, which was about 2 years after I did, they were still talking about some of the shenanigans I pulled there. Some of the pranks I pulled and things like that, you know, putting Vaseline all over the buttons on the vending machines just, you know, for fun. And, you know, taking people's, if they left their coat in the break room, I'd stuff it into one of the ceiling tiles and things like that. And, you know, some of the pranks I pulled on air and whatnot. But things did not end well there. I was escorted out of the building by security. Almost the same thing that happened at 26 for totally different reasons, but I was escorted out of the building for one of the biggest bullshit things that there is out there, our current sexual harassment law.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. I honestly can't tell you if I did what I got fired for, because I have no clue. I was pulled into the office one day right after I walked into the building, and they said, you know, we've got to remember how sexual harassment laws work. It's all to protect the complainer, which also gives, you don't even have to have evidence that somebody did this, which is where I call bullshit on this.
Okay.
They said, supposedly last weekend, you said something to someone at some time, and we have to let you go. I'm like, what did I supposedly say? They said, we can't tell you because then you would be able to identify the person that filed the complaint against you. So literally, Scott, 100% not lying, I have no clue if what I got fired from 26 for I actually did or not.
At two, sorry.
Okay. I have no clue if I actually did it.
Okay.
So that one, I don't know if I should take responsibility that I fucked myself, or if it was just somebody got sick of my antics and decided to file a false claim against me. That's the problem with our current sexual harassment law. It's all to protect the victim, and they can lie.
So at two was this when the seeds of your creativity, either from, you know, for Lost in the Static or for some of the other shows that you've done, was this where that seed was sown?
So I guess I would say yes and no, because I felt so slighted after what happened that I wished I'd had an outlet, you know, that I could bitch publicly about this.
Okay.
And I probably would have if I hadn't have found 26 right away. I got hired at 26 a week and a half after being fired from two. So really my firing was more of a vacation than anything else. It was a week and a half vacation that I didn't have to go to work.
Lucky you. So then you came to 26, and that is where
you and I met.
And because of what's going on, I don't want to talk about your firing at 26. I don't want to talk about how you left, but I do want to talk about your work there, because I know it was at 26 that you had the chance to do your horror host type show.
Well, even before that, just doing the specials on Halloween.
Sure.
I did the specials three Halloweens in a row.
Okay. And tell me about those.
Those just came about. Now, you got to remember, 26 and Channel 32, even though they're owned separately, they're operated by the staff at 26.
Right.
Just for the listeners that... So when I say Channel 32, I'm still basically talking about Channel 26. It's the same staff, same bosses, everything like that. And I just... You know, I kept seeing on Halloween every year, they'd have a bunch of awesome movies that 32 would have the rights to. And they'd show, and it's like, this would be the perfect opportunity. So after a while, I talked one of them into, how about I do some wraparounds? You know, coming out of, you know, in and out of each commercial break. How about I do some wraparounds? And they said, all right, fine. So I went out to a haunted house. And the first year, I tried to do it kind of serious, and it didn't work. It wasn't well planned out. That's why those segments are not on YouTube. I mean, I've got copies, but I'm not unhappy with them, but I'm not happy with them.
Okay.
They are what they are. Then the second year, I tried to do it a little more serious, you know, more serious, kind of not that like, welcome to the spooky hour, but just, you know, I kind of tried to do it serious, giving information. Again, those are on YouTube, but I'm not proud. I'm not disproud, but that's where I first did the, remember the Halloween taste test, the Jones Soda Halloween taste test? That's on YouTube, and it's actually kind of funny because that's the only intentionally funny thing we did in that show. And then the next year I said, you know what? Fuck this. Let's just go funny. And I decided, let's just make it a straight out and out comedy. And I thought some of the segments worked quite well. I mean, I don't know about your opinion on that, but I thought some of them, I thought they were pretty creative, and some of the whole concept was lost, though, because the concept was, we're trying to put on a serious show as like live, and every single thing you can think of that goes wrong or can go wrong goes wrong. And people didn't get that. They thought it was really just a really shoddy broadcast that didn't work right. And it's like, man, I guess my humor just goes over people's heads sometimes.
That's possible.
Because we actually got phone calls thinking that one of the fuck-ups was a real fuck-up. Because one of them, for those of you that haven't seen it, was, we don't realize we're back from break. And so we're just talking all out of character. We're just like, yeah, well, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the book and its impact. We were showing Dracula that year and whatnot. And then as soon as I start getting back into character, like, welcome back, we cut back to the movie. And see, Scott's laughing right now because that's actually kind of funny, isn't it?
If you're in on the joke, yeah. Yeah, I can see
it. But people
thought
that we really were screwing up. And it's like, I thought that was funny. And I also did a word-for-word recreation of the Bill O'Reilly Inside Edition freakout with beeps and everything, which I thought was also pretty damn funny.
That's pretty good. So, and then when you the first work that you and I started doing together seriously was with Steve, whose on-air name isn't coming to my brain right now.
Steve Brown?
No.
Steve?
The horror host.
Oh, Ned the Dead.
Thank you, Ned the Dead.
Jesus, really?
I
used to run camera for Ned the Dead, and so did Scott. And then I started appearing on air a couple of times, and it kind of got more wild. And there are reasons that I won't go into here that are why that show is not only not on the air anymore, but why Matt Haney ran that thing into the ground because he is an inept fucking producer who likes to steal other people's ideas and claim them as his own. Oh, sorry. Did I say too much, Scott?
No, not at all. So, but that's when I started learning about this encyclopedic knowledge of, especially horror. Is horror the one genre that really draws you, or is there...
I'd actually say sci-fi would draw me. Science fiction would draw me in more than horror does.
Okay.
But horror, you know, was always a big part of my life. Watching the movies, reading the comics, reading the books. You know, Halloween. I think Halloween is, you know, the best day of the year. October 31st should be a national fucking holiday. It's not. All other holidays are just crappy excuses why I don't get mail. That's the way I look at those other holidays. You like that concept?
That's good. I like that.
Well, I wanted to ask you something.
Sure.
When you first started working with me at 26, you and I did not hit it off right away.
Hated you.
That's what I was going to ask. At what point did you kind of warm up to me and kind of go, maybe he's not this nutbag that he seems to be?
I don't know. I you and I really didn't. I mean, we were work friends, but that was about it. You know, our work day would end and we would each go home and then we would see each other either next weekend or whenever we worked together the next time. And that was about it. You know, you and I didn't even really become friends until after I had left 26.
No, I would say we were more than work friends shortly before you.
Shortly you got, before.
Because,
but he was,
because yeah, we would talk on the phone and, you know, I mean, we hadn't got Lost in the Static up yet, but... You know, we talked outside of work
right
by that point.
But it, really, for me, I don't know exactly when the switch was made. I tolerated you because I had to work with you. And seriously, that's as far as I ever wanted to take it. And I don't know, I guess it was through that tolerating you that... I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but... You and I were discussing something with a particular anchor, and I'm not going to say who.
Right.
But you and I were discussing something with a particular anchor, and I was telling them about it, and you chimed in. And you and I believe, in that conversation, showed more intelligence and more knowledge of the world.
I think we kind of like shared a moment.
Yeah, but there was a moment where I looked over and I went, okay, this guy isn't just... a stupid, it was that moment of illumination when I said, okay, this guy isn't just a stupid contrarian.
You had an epiphany?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't call it an epiphany, I don't remember exactly when, but I remember we had a moment like that when I went, okay, this guy's smarter than he lets on. And I think that was the time the switch was made. But let's... Now, obviously, out of Ned the Dead and out of your Halloween specials, you attempted to get a show on the air. Could you tell me about that one?
Well, the short end of it is, you know, you guys have seen the early It Came From Beyond Midnights at Geek Juice Media, where they're hosted right now. And that was supposed to be a Saturday night 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. show. And I was having so many problems with management at 26 over the stuff Scott and I can't talk about, that they basically, and I'm putting this in quotes, punished me or tried to keep me in line by saying, if I don't knock off the things we can't talk about, you know, the complaints I was making, that they were going to kill my show. And you and I have already discussed, you don't threaten me.
No.
You don't threaten me. So I amped my shit up. And they took my show. And I said, you know what? Fine. Fuck you. I took it to the internet and got more views than I ever would have if it had been on the air. So it's one of those weird things. Fuck them.
Now, see, when I first saw it came from Beyond Midnight and everything, it was being hosted on the SpooneyExperiment.com.
Yeah. Right.
Now, how did you make that leap from trying to work for 32 and you know, maybe putting your stuff up on Spoonie's site out of frustration? When did you meet Todd Sheets, and when did Jackalope start playing a part?
Shortly before my exit from 26. I had just come up with the idea of, you know what, fuck it. I want to do this. I want to do my own show. Fuck it. I'm going to do this thing I've always talked about. And I can't remember if I talked to you first or Todd first.
Todd.
Okay, I was going to say, I can't remember exactly how that worked. But I emailed him, and I'll go into more detail in our 100th episode, but basically he had just let another show go, and he had an open spot. And he was like, can you have something next week? It's like, sure, I'll throw something together.
I actually remember that phone call you calling. I've got to have a show by next week. Can you do it? I'm like, yeah, come on over.
And yeah, we'll talk much more detail about that.
Yeah, we'll go into that.
In our 100th.
So if you had a chance now, let's say you could talk to your 10-year-old self. What would you say?
If I could talk to my 10-year-old self, I'd say, treat your comic books better. They're going to be worth a ton of money. Stop fucking ripping the covers off to hang them on your wall. You know, do not sell the Star Wars toys for $1 a piece at a garage sale. Keep them. That's what I would say to me. And the way you're giggling.
I would go back and go, there's going to be this company called Google. I would like you to invest in it. I realize that you don't understand finance, but just tell your father. You know, just go do. On a more serious note, you have, of course, you would say hold on to your collectibles and everything like that, especially being a collector now. Is there anything on a more serious note or on a more personal note?
I don't know about
note?
My 10-year-old self, but I'd go back to, you know, the early years of my marriage and not make some of the mistakes that I did. You know, I'd tell myself not to do some of the things and whatnot. I mean, I wouldn't correct some of the work things because, let's face it, Scott, where I am now is much better. You know, the way Eben put it to me, who would have thought getting fired from 26 was the best thing that ever could have happened to you?
Now, obviously, getting fired from a job like this and you've come and prior to Lost in the Static and what the fuck working out and all of that, you have had some financial troubles and you're still
major financial troubles.
You're still not out of the pits.
I'm almost back to zero. Does that count?
That's
I'm almost
for an
back
American,
to zero.
That's something. What? This is hard to say. Not hard to say. It's hard to word. Where do you want to see these shows going? Where do you want your career to be in 10, 15, 20 years?
I would like, now let's not count the Adam and Eve stuff as really getting paid to do this. For one thing, it's commission-based and it's not that much.
Right.
I would like to find a way to get paid to do this, like Sirius, you know, like on Sirius Satellite Radio or something like that. I'd like to be able to, hey, this is your show this week. Here's the couple of $100 we're paying you to put on this week's show. I'd love to be able to make, for lack of a better term, a living doing this. I would love to be able to have major magazines want my stuff without me having to convince them to, hey, this article would be good because of this. And, you know, my audience that listens to me would buy the magazine. You know, I'd like to, and it's not, this is not out of an ego or out of hubris. I'd like to be a big enough name that I can consistently work without having to constantly struggle to get the work. Does that make sense?
That makes
perfect
sense.
In a roundabout way?
Now, on a couple other things that I want to ask you about before the show ends here is, you are also, I wouldn't call it an outspoken vegetarian, but you're very much a vegetarian. And where?
I just don't like meat. I've never liked the taste. I don't like the consistency. Maybe, I mean, now on a moral level, I don't like the fact that an animal had to die for that. I mean, I'm not one of these PETA, you know, fuckers, but like, if, you know, I don't understand how someone could eat a steak if they've met the cow. That to me, I don't understand that. You know, I know you, that's not a problem. To me, that's a problem because maybe I personify the animal too much. I don't know.
I've met a lot of cows and a lot of pigs, and I don't mind eating them.
Right. I've never liked the taste of meat, and I'm fine with a cheese pizza.
Okay.
I don't understand why. I mean, Eben used to say, so are you going to get a pizza with nothing good on it again? And it's like, what's wrong with a cheese pizza?
So another deal, and you and I have talked about this, and I'm not going to go into huge details on this, but you also, you're a man of routine.
I have mild OCD. I've actually been diagnosed. I've got a very, I don't know if you want to call it a low level, but I mean, you've seen me freak out over stuff that's not even on a shelf and stuff, and that's not an act. That really, really bothers me when I see that kind of stuff. I think, getting a little psychological, I think a routine helps me stay sane, if you even want to call me sane at this point.
Yeah, well, neither here nor there.
Relatively sane?
Relatively. I've met crazier. I'm married crazier. If you do have to break that routine, and let's say you do get a big enough name that somebody says, hey, come work on this movie that I'm doing, or hey, I want you to do voiceover work, but we've got this studio in LA and I'd like you to come to LA, and you have to break that routine, how do you cope? Because I really have seen you fall apart over small things, like things not being even on a shelf, or I think I was at your house and I put a videotape back in the wrong place or something, and you
were close to getting hit.
Yeah, and you freaked out about it. So if this does go somewhere, if this career really does take off, how are you going to be able to cope with this?
I think I'd be able to cope with it in short bursts. Like, you know, if we were called out to LA to do some voiceovers or something, I'd be able to do that for a week. But I'd need to kind of touch base back to home, you know. I'd need to sleep in my own bed at some point again, because I've never been a hotel person. I don't like sleeping in a hotel. I don't know. I like my bed, you know. But I mean, you know, if on a short-term basis, I'd be able to. And if it would be something that would be creatively stimulating, like one of my scripts is getting turned into a movie or something, I think that would overrule the routine necessity.
Now, where can we find, you mentioned one of your scripts. What kind of ideas do you have floating around right now?
I'm not going to say them on the air because Hollywood is full of thieves.
Okay.
So no, until the script actually comes out, I'm not telling my ideas. I think they're pretty damn original. Not Joss Whedon, oh my God, I'm so clever, original. I mean, I think these are things I have not seen done, especially in the manner that I have them proposed as.
Now, that brings up something interesting. If you could sit down with all of Hollywood, whoever we see as the movie-making establishment, and you could tell them, you get two sentences, and they will all listen very intently to these two sentences. What do you have to say to them?
Well, first, will my two sentences actually make a difference, or I'm
they will actually talking? Make a difference. They will listen, and they will act upon them.
Stop being so superficial, and absolutely stop pandering. That's what I would say.
Okay.
And if it would make a difference, you wouldn't see remakes, and you wouldn't see sequels, and you wouldn't see 9 out of the 10 top-grossing movies of the last 10 years being based off of previously established works or a sequel to something.
So, okay. And I don't want to get you too ranty. Where can people find you online?
1201beyond.com.
Okay. And what can we expect there?
All of my radio shows, Radiodrome, Lost in the Static, What the Fuck, anything I guest on, like Geek Juice Media or Geek Juice Radio or Erased Rewind. The Beyond Midnights are there. Some of the weird unaired the promos I made for like Videoscope magazine.
And you recently had an article published in Hustler.
I've got an article coming out in Shadowland. I'm pitching a couple more articles. I don't know whether this will actually happen, but to Wired and Rolling Stone and Esquire, don't know if those will actually happen because those places are very they're very incesty. You know, well, we don't really take new writers. We take new material from people we've already worked with. It's sort of that, you know, you got to know a guy to know a guy. You know, it's like I've been trying to get an agent so we can try and get some of that voiceover work we've been talking about. But do you know how hard that is?
Yes, I do.
Because it is, for those that don't know, the only way to get an agent is on referral from another agent.
Right.
So it's one of those, you have to get an agent to get an agent to get an agent to get an agent. You know, otherwise they have to contact you first. It's this giant circle jerk that stops anyone from the outside coming in. And and part of the other part of that problem is if you're trying to pitch a script or anything, no one will take a script that's not brought by an agent. So it's this giant exclusionary system.
Okay.
And I want to change that.
Okay. One last question before we go here.
I'm totally against that.
Okay. Was there one piece of media? I mean, we've talked about comic books influencing you. We've talked about what people might see as serious writing, like I said, Heinlein and all of the science fiction and real books influencing you. TV, obviously, an influence. Movies, obviously, an influence. Is there one piece of media or one work that you hold above others as a shining example of what media should be?
Harlan Ellison's novella, Mephisto and Onyx. I have never been so enthralled with a story before. That, I mean, it literally, this is going to sound tacky, time stopped while I was reading that. I started to read it 20 minutes before I had to leave for work when I worked at a hotel, and I just said, I'm going to read the first chapter or two. I finished the book, and it was 3 hours later, and it never even occurred to me, I've got to go to work, or I should put this down. I mean, that book is the pinnacle of amazing fiction. Harlan Ellison's Mephisto in Onyx. Absolutely phenomenal.
Okay.
We got like 2.5 minutes. You got anything else?
Yeah,
we got
about 2.5 minutes, and I'm out of questions, actually. Was there anything that you think I should have mentioned?
Well, I'd like to ask you, from when I was all crazy at 26... did you ever think that I could have been crazier when I was at Channel 2? or did you think this guy is already borderline being put in a padded cell?
Oh, I still think you're still borderline being put in a padded cell. But I saw the glint in the back of your eye.
Did you at least see the originality that I always strove for?
I did.
Especially in some of my pranks.
I did.
I mean, how many times did I fucking get Diana with that goddamn rat?
You annoyed people in very original and creative ways.
I always like to think that. Or I know this was after you, or the what to do if a zombie attacks you OSHA posters I used to put up all over the building. I know that was after you.
I wish I could have seen one of those, but
They always took them down, and then I would put them back up all over the building, and they looked just like OSHA posters that I had made up. I thought it was pretty original and funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's really good. So I really have nothing else to other than thanks. Thanks for sitting down and thanks for answering my questions. I know some of them were kind of difficult for you, and I appreciate that.
Well, and I want to thank you for doing this show with me. And, you know, you've done Radiodrome, you've done What the Fuck, and I know sometimes you feel a little marginalized all that, but it's not intentional.
As I put it, if I can ride coattails to stardom, I got no problem with that.
Well, and see, my thing is, I'm not trying to get famous. I'm trying to get us famous. That's the way. I would like us to be able to work without having to work. You know,
exactly.
I'd like us to be able. So any producers, agents, anything, help us. We will work for you.
We can be a little
We have
hoarse,
a pretty decent fan base.
Thanks everybody else for joining us, and thanks for putting up with these last couple of episodes. We will see you next week. Ugh.